Blog Talk Radio.
Weather's been fluctuating like hell this week. Yesterday here in Cincinnati was like in the high 40, very rainy and flooding. For those of you in the Midwest, please stay safe and all that good stuff. And those of you in the East Coast enjoying the nice weather, well, I hate you. But anyway, thank you for tuning to the Clown Hour. This is Scott Burks, creator of a sports blog called The Clown Times. That's Clown spelled with K, by the way. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you can find me on Facebook as well. Just do a search for The Clown Times in the upper left-hand search window, upper left-hand corner of Facebook. Again, it's Clown spelled with K. You'll be able to find me there as well. Lots of stuff went on last weekend with the All-Star game. Laura Ingram's comments on LeBron James, what he said, in the interview he had with Kerry Champion of ESPN, as well as Kevin Durant, as well as NCAA vacating Louisville's 2013 national championship, which I think is stupid, as well as the Hampton/MEAC feud, the athletic conference. For those of you who are not so familiar with the HBCU sports world, we'll definitely get to that, which will be entertaining as well as informational. And help me break that down. From Sleazy Radio every Tuesday night here on Blog Talk Radio, as well as the sports blog, the yard/HBCU Sports, where that's about all things HBCU sports. Dwayne Nash is in the house. D Nash, once again, how are you, my friend?
Man, a couple of things. First and foremost, don't be jealous of us out here in the East Coast. This whole weather change and global warming that doesn't exist just happens to make it almost 80 degrees out here in D.C. on February 21st.
Yeah.
I saw entirely too many pairs of shorts walking around here as if it isn't February and as if it didn't just snow/sleet on Saturday here. But, you know, people get a little bit too comfortable when you get two straight days of warm weather. Number two, I'm going to be a little riled up today. It's going to be a little entertaining. You know, there's a lot of stuff that went on this past weekend as it pertains to the sports that we're going to talk about. But, yeah, it's about to be entertaining and educational towards the end. So I'm going to ask for people to go ahead and put your recorders on because, it's going to be a very entertaining slash educational.
Definitely. We both have a lot of shit on our minds. Given to what happened over the weekend, and in some cases the past couple weeks at least, and we'll touch on that like later on the podcast, or let the latter part, the last couple of weeks stuff. But let's get to the NBA All-Star game. I don't know about you, bro, but I was thoroughly entertained. It's like that line in the famous movie, "Are you not entertained?" I mean, it was great. I mean, look, I know defense was still optional. I get that, but I mean, it just had a different vibe. It's like a it was pretty much like a professional pickup game, and that was due to the player drafts. You know what I'm saying? It's like Team LeBron, Team Steph, because those are two top All-Star getters. They got to choose their own teams. Blah blah blah. The only regret was. My only gripe was it wasn't live. I mean, it wasn't live. And I guess people were afraid. I guess the NBA brass was afraid that it'd be her feelings, those who would pick last. Those who would pick last, by the way, one of whom was Al Horford, said he didn't give a damn. They're professionals. They just have to be in the All-Star game anyway. So it didn't make a difference to them. So, therefore, Adam Silver, who's always ahead of the curve as far as sports commission, like professional sports commissioners go, is going to have a live draft next year, which would be awesome. I just hope that it's like in the green room. It's like if they're like, there's those balls are like an audience and they're just like listen to, like, see the names on the board, you know, whoever top two vote getters are, and that would be great. I mean, it's like, I mean, for those who play pickup ball or pickup, you know, any sport, especially basketball, I mean, you know how the feeling is. You know, it's like there's one dude who your boys are right, who's like side eye if you don't pick him right away. But I just think it was great. Pride was on the line. I mean, you just if you could imagine, like, you know, LeBron's like, my squad could beat your squad, bro, because, you know, like, you know, to Steph Curry, because again, they picked their squads. I mm-hmm. thought it was much more exciting, and a couple of minutes of the game was they both squads turned it up on the defensive end, you know, and even before that, I mean, you know, it became a game of you can't check me, like can you check me? It's like, you know, like Joel Embiid and Russell Westbrook still had that beef going in the game. It's like Joel Embiid came out with a squeak dunk, and Westbrook tried to drive on him. He just took it to the hole right on him and died. So it's good to see that beef still going. But in any event, I just thought it was exciting. You know, it didn't have to be all like 1990 NBA style defense, but grabbing folks and punching folks when they go drive. But to me, it was still very exciting. Again, I sound like a broken record, but it was very exciting. And, you know, you could tell a lot of pride was on the line. Like both squads took pride in beating the other squad and being safe in the end in terms of no injuries.
Exactly. And I'm glad that was the best part of it, even though I'll get to Jimmy Butler in a little bit.
Yeah.
First and foremost, the irony of the game ending on a defensive play was hilarious to me. And the fact that, you know, LeBron had the wherewithal to make sure that even though they had a bunch of shooters out there, they made sure to double-team the shooter and put him in the corner, and that's Steph Curry, toward the end of the fourth. And like you said, it was very competitive. You know, there was a lot of jaw-jacking going on, but a lot of healthy competition. And one of the things that Reggie Miller said during the game, I don't know if it will necessarily work, and I know one reason why it won't work, which is he thought it would be a better idea if the teams were actually selected on the night of the All-Star game. So Sunday night, once you get to the arena, the two captains make their picks. Now, the reason why it won't work is because Nike won't let that work. And let me explain why I say that.
Uh-oh.
It's because the jerseys won't be printed. Yeah, you know, the jerseys won't be printed. And they got to make their money off the All-Star jersey.
Right.
So they got to have that available for the fans to buy that. But that's an enticing idea to attempt to do if there was a way to work around that. But I'm actually more in line with saying they need to go ahead, do it live, like you said, but do it around the same time in which they had it, but do it live so that the fans can see. But like you said earlier, you know, feelings might get hurt if someone gets selected last. And we saw that in Russell Westbrook, who believed he thought he was the last one picked, even though, bud, no, your name just starts with W and everything was done in alphabetical order. And it's like he needed that chip on his shoulder. So the stuff like that, it actually generates a different incentive to play outside of the money and slight competition that's involved. So, yes, fantastic move. I love to see that it happened. And thankfully, no major injuries happened. But the fact that Jimmy Butler said he wanted to sit out because, you know, he wanted to rest for the remainder of the season because he wasn't feeling well and he was sick. Shame on you, Jimmy, because, dude, you got a week off prior and you get a week off after. It's Wednesday now. Kings don't start playing until tomorrow. Dude, what's the deal? You really need that much rest? Man, you know, you could have given this kind of to somebody else that wanted to play, but,
and,
you know.
Exactly.
You know, just go ahead, man. Don't kill me with the whole I need rest stuff, and you got 2 weeks of rest, a week before and a week after the All-Star game to get yourself right. But that was just out of everything else that went well, even with the competitions, even though the slam dunk contest will never be what it once was with our lore, you know, of Jordan, mm-hmm. Dominique, and Spud Webb, and Larry Nance, and Dr. J, and the like. Even Saturday went well, in my personal opinion. You know, so everything was enjoyable, with the exception of the national anthem. And what was the other
Most
thing that happened?
The national anthem was horrible. That's how bad it was.
Yes. Yeah, we got that out there.
It was hilarious, too.
Yes, which he should have. Which he should have. Because, you know, Carl Owens ain't no singer. Even though his attempt was horrible, he knows that I'm not a singer. I'm not trying to riff. But that whole lead-up, that whole montage leading up to the announcements with Kevin Hart, they could have done without that, too. So I'm just getting ready for Charlotte next year. And I want to see, one, how the NBA does it, and two, how the state handles it after the whole HB2 has now subsided and allowed for the game to come to the city.
You know what? I think that people in North Carolina, I'm not down there, but I'm going down there this weekend, but, you know, visit family. But I think that folks will be happy to have it back. I know people are still bitter about the game leaving. Like, was it last season when it went to New Orleans? But, you know, I mean, we go into politics, which makes me sick and nauseated. But nevertheless, they're going to be those same people who are still bitter will probably be happy when they see that money rolling in. So I think money kills all ills.
And yes, it
could kill hurt feelings and everything else. So I think the people in Charlotte would be happy. I think the state would be happy because they're going to get that pie, piece of that pie too. So here's to believing that all those hurt feelings will be smoothed over by a few greenbacks. Now getting back to the boy Jimmy Butler. I mean, look, we all know that he plays for a coach of Tom Thibodeau, who grinds cats middle of the season as if it's game 7 of the NBA Finals. We know that, okay? He has a reputation. Even cats who swear by him, like Jimmy Butler, know that about him. But, at the same time, I think, to your point, there were a lot of cats who would love to have a spot. I mean, you can imagine how many players have they written to their contracts about bonuses, all-star bonuses. You know what I'm saying? And also, Suga plays one of those players who probably would have Lou Williams from the Clippers, who tweeted at Jimmy Butler, clowning him. I don't have this tweet in front of me, but essentially clowning Butler over his decision, which is quite entertaining in and of itself. but I get the point well taken. If you ask him to vote in, unless you are hurt, like some guys were, just show up. Just show up. I mean, come on. Please. I mean, I'm speechless. But the whole thing is, just show up. Give the fans what they want. I mean, the two top vote getters, one whom voted, like, picked you to be on his squad. You would have got some nice cheddar. You're playing the game. I mean, it's just a bad look. It's just a bad look. I mean, to sit out the All Star game. Saying you're sick. I mean, boo, freaking who, man? Come on. Seriously. Come on. But outside of that, I just think it was a pretty good All-Star weekend, even though, to your point, the slam dunk contest will never be what it once was when we were growing up. Mainly because the stars don't do it. But nevertheless, the 3-point shot was great. The skills competition was great. The All-Star game was even greater. And, you know, 3 out of 4 ain't bad, so we're gonna take the good with the little bad. But I'll say this: as far as your idea for the NBA draft, I mean not the NBA, but the NBA All-Star Game draft, I'd say instead of having like a week before, have it like the Friday night. Have it like the Friday night, because I'll give Nike and its mass production facilities up in Oregon. Enough time to produce jerseys. I mean, hell, I think they should already have jerseys produced anyway, but that's just not here nor there. But it will give them a little bit more time, right? And maybe, just maybe, I mean, I would say have it like ahead of that time and have the draft, quote-unquote, live that Friday night, even though it probably was already decided like maybe a few days ago to give Nike time. But, it'll still take away the authenticity of it. But, shoot, it really gets started on a Thursday night. So have it on a Thursday. Just have it on Thursday or Friday night. You know, that way, I mean, it should give Nike the time to produce those jerseys, I would think. So that's my only thing. Just have it for the Friday, like the Friday when things really start to kick off of NBA All-Star Weekend. Have it live. Like, have players all sitting around and just let TNT do its thing. And I think it'll be great. I think it'll be awesome. I'm just glad for a live draft. I'm just glad for a live All-Star draft. Speaking of All-Star games, I mean, this one thing that did happen All-Star weekend was the interview that LeBron James and Kevin Durant had with Kerry Champion of ESPN. You know, they like when they ride along in the car, they're going who the hell knows where they're going, right? Or they're driving to. But they talk about a lot of things. LeBron brought up, of course, when someone spray painted the N word on one of his palatial estates in Brentwood, interesting enough, where O.J. Simpson used to live. But anyway, LeBron James comments about that and about President Donald Trump, and the name of the series is called Rolling with the Champion. That's a Kerry Champion from ESPN.
Yes.
That really set Laura Ingraham off. We all know that. And which led to the infamous just shut up and dribble comment. Now, look, you and I could probably take her comments one of many, 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 many different directions. I mean, one could say it was racially tinged, you know, like in terms of like a dog, the famous dog whistle of, you know, a kid, not a black NBA player, not finishing high school. As she said, quote, this is what happens when you attempt to leave high school a year early to join the NBA, which was obviously not the case. He finished high school. He graduated in the top half of his, in the top pink quarter of his class, if I'm not mistaken. He's a bright guy. He could have easily went to college if he wanted to. Okay? Had over 3-0 in high school. I mean, he's not a dummy. All right? So there's that. And that also will feed into certain segment of our population who think that black athletes, especially basketball players, are dumb. So we all know about that as well. And I could speak to the ignorance of her comments when she said that, leaving high school year early to join the NBA and not realizing that LeBron is much bigger than basketball. He's like an icon now. And, the dude's worldwide, and he has a lot to say about different issues, which I appreciate him more than I did one Michael Jordan, who didn't say anything about anything until long after he retired. But one thing I want to focus on is, and actually one more thing I want to say. Her shut up and dribble comments came from her book that she put out in 2003 called Shut Up and Sing, where she went off on the Dixie Chicks and Bette Midler, I think it was. No, I'm sorry, not Bette Midler, but Barbara Streisand, rather.
Okay.
She told those two when they came out against former President George W. Bush to, quote, shut up and sing. So that was her little carryover from Shut Up and Dribble. I get that. And she probably didn't have any racial malice in her mind, in her heart. She probably, again, just a little alliteration of what she said in 2003. My problem is with the hypocrisy of her statements. And basically, if she just pretty much told LeBron James, Kevin Durant, the Dixie Chicks, and Barbra Streisand to stick to whatever and stay out of politics. Why didn't she say that to Clint Eastwood when he came out in support of our president? Why didn't she say that to, like, to Kid Rock, like tell Kid Rock to just shut up and make music? Why didn't she tell Coach Bob Knight to shut up and coach? Why didn't she tell my favorite one? Why didn't she tell Joe the Plumber when he came out against then Senator Barack Obama during the presidential race and had this 15 minutes last all over Fox News because of that? Why didn't she or anyone tell his ass to go to shut up and go plumb? To go fix a sink or fix a toilet? It's because those people agree with her politics. They agree with her opinions. Nothing's wrong. I'm not getting on Laura Ingraham from having an opinion. That's her right to say what she said. Just like it is LeBron James' right to say what he said. He has an opinion on President Trump, most of which I agree with. I'll put myself out there. I don't care. And I think some of which you agree with.
Of course.
It turns out to be most other people agree with. But the bottom line is, it's our right as American citizens to have opinions on government elected public elected officials. Just like it was her opinion to say, to come out against LeBron's opinion, just like it was Clint Eastwood and all those other people, Kid Rock, Coach Bob Knight, what's his name, the actor? God dang it.
Which
Chuck
one?
Norris,
cause
like exactly.
Because, you know, she came out in defense of Scott Baio, Antonio Sabato Jr. So there are a lot of people that she came out in defense of, and one who I'm going to say for a little bit later when I have my comments to say in terms of who she defended. But like you said, this her remarks could have been taken multiple ways. Of course, the easy one is to take it racially. And I didn't want to necessarily do that. I don't like instantaneously pointing at someone and calling them a racist if their views or opinions, one, may be opposite of mine, and two, may be completely misunderstood at the time, even though it may allude that way. So I didn't want to necessarily do that, but it's easy to do so, especially when you don't find her being critical of Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, who have said the exact same things, if not worse.
Yes.
You said that she was critical of the Dixie Chicks and of Barbra Streisand. So I'm like, okay, so it's entertainers.
Yes.
But it's not all entertainers because, of course, like you just said, she's not critical of those that share the views of her. And that was one of the things that I was going to point out. And I just find it highly interesting. One of the other people, and it wasn't just entertainers, because it's also athletes. She also came to the defense of Curt Schilling. I don't know if you remember or not, but Schilling made a comment about comparing radical Islam to being a Nazi. And, of course, ESPN slapped him on the hand with that and said, no, 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 you can't come out and say stuff like that. And apparently, Ms. Ingraham didn't like the way that ESPN responded to Curt Schilling. So what I did was I read a tweet that she retweeted that it was an article written about ESPN's mishandling of Curt Schilling and them defending Schilling. And part of the defense was, and for her to retweet this, she has to be in support of the article. It said that basically Curt Schilling was being kept out of the Baseball Hall of Fame because he's vocal about his support of the military and of Christianity. Nah, bruh. That is the reason why. Check that dude's veins. Check his butt cheeks. Let's look at the injections to see how many steroid hits he done took. That's the reason why he's potentially, allegedly, being held out of, not in his views. Trust me, there are a lot of people in the hall of any sport whose views I don't necessarily agree with, but the one thing you can't do as an athlete is be a cheater and be caught on it or be found guilty thoroughly throughout the court of a public opinion and get into a Hall of Fame. And Kurt Schilling is one of those dudes. So I just find it funny that she's in support of that athlete and not LeBron James. No, I understand why she doesn't do it, but it's just hilarious. You got the cheater in Kurt Schilling. You got the alleged cheater in Tom Brady, who she also supports. But players like LeBron James and Kevin Durant, who haven't been alleged of cheating, as far as we know of, you know, they haven't been caught, play the game as clean as possible, hard workers, and do nothing but want to succeed. Once again, man, I just find it just because they have different views. And I understand that's what her show is about. It's to go ahead and rile up her base, which is part of the reason why I don't like to pay attention to that type of stuff, because it is what it is. You know, it's to do what it just did, create a reaction and create buzz, which draws attention to her show regardless of how it's done, and potentially even her book. For someone who has done the research and said that she said something similar to that when she wrote her book, those type of people will be like, well, let me see what she wrote in her book. And it may push out a couple more units because of that. So, yeah, it worked.
Like Costello, by the way. He was already
exactly.
Costello in 2003 for Costello. It's going to make more money.
Exactly. Just a little bit, you know. But, you know, it's just stuff like that, man. I try to brush over. And I'm glad that LeBron James handled it as best as he did, especially throughout the weekend. And I'm just surprised that no one, as far as I saw, quizzed him up on it. And I guess he just decided he wasn't going to talk about it as much. But, yeah, he handled it the best way he possibly could, man. And I guess that's what you do when you have part of a high school education.
Right. So let me ask you this before I get involved in further. So I remember Kurt Schilling was played, and he obviously played and started in the quote-unquote steroid era of baseball. But was he one of those people who was on the Dow report along with Barry Bonds and all those other cats?
I think that he was, him and Clemens. I think that they were.
I got to check on that because I know Roger Clemens was, obviously. That's why he's going to be kept out. But that's not here nor there. But basically, I'm glad you brought up Kurt Schilling. He was a former athlete, former great pitcher in major leagues. But again, to your point, that's why I'm screaming hypocrisy at this at Laura Ingraham, because other athletes, other non-politicians, non-political pundits have opinions on all things, anything political. That's how we are. We pay attention. A lot of us read. A lot of us listen to the news. A lot of us read news, and that's incumbent upon me to know what's going on as an American citizen, as a citizen of this world, just as it is LeBron James, just as it is about Kurt Schilling, Cabello, Clint Eastwood, Coach Bob Knight, former Coach Bob Knight, Kid Rock, all those other cats who she's agreed to never call on the carpet. That's their right. It's also my right, your right, LeBron James's right, Kevin Durant's right, anyone else's right. That's our God-given rights as Americans. And for her to just disrespectfully brush LeBron James aside as if he's nothing, I mean, shoot, LeBron James is the ultimate American dream. He came from nothing. And look at him now. He made some of himself. It was through hard work and determination. And look at where he is. He went from being a very poor kid in Akron, Ohio, to being a worldwide icon in less than 20 years. It's just something. That's the American dream. Same with Kevin Durant, even though Kevin Durant didn't have the harder background as LeBron, but still, a lot of those guys are the American dream. People like Laura Ingraham can realize that. I mean, it's just unfortunate. It's just unfortunate to be civil. And that's been going on for the past, at least 9, 10, 11, 12, years. Since George W. Bush, to be honest with you. So, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate. But again, it just frustrates me that I see who doesn't agree with your opinion, say stick to sports or stick to this, just because they don't agree with it, which I think is just unproductive and just very, very stupid. If you're going to call out LeBron James, call out Coach Stillman, call out Clint Wood to stay in their lanes as well. But, of course, that's not going to happen. So I just wish that he would have just left things alone. You know, say anything about people who are outside politics who happen to agree with you, at least be consistent. Again, I'm not exploiting her for having an opinion. I'm just getting on her for being hypocritical. That's pretty much the bottom line, and I think you are too. So
yeah.
But I will say this. I will say this right quick. I understand why people thought it was a racially changed comment, because to your point, you mentioned this, she didn't go after Steve Kerr, she didn't go after Greg Popovich, she didn't go after Stan Van Gundy, she didn't go after Adam Silver, or she didn't go after Chris Long, the Philadelphia Eagles, or other white personalities in sports, or whoever, coaches, or executives, or whoever, of having the same opinions as LeBron and Kevin Durant. I just find that very interesting. Maybe because she doesn't know much about him. That may be the case. I don't know. Hell, she thought that LeBron was a high school dropout, that she probably doesn't know much about Steve Kerr or Greg Popovich. But, I mean, it's possible. That's why I think people jumped on that racial bandwagon, which I think is too easy of a bandwagon to jump on anyway, but that's not here nor there. But I just think that it's more – I think it was more ignorance on her part to assume that LeBron didn't finish high school. And B, I think, again, we touched on this already, I found it very hypocritical about how she worded her comments and how she got on them for not staying in their lane. But again, other non-political pundits or whoever who agree with her tell them not to stay in their lane as well. So it is what it is, but, you know, I'm tired of talking about it.
Yeah, I know, but just two quick things. You know, just the whole slapping the label of racism on it as easily as people have. To be the devil's advocate in this situation, had it been other people in that video, had Greg Popovich or Steve Kerr been in that video interview with them and should not address them, then I really would have had an issue. But it's, once again, you know, being, like you said, possibility she may have been ignorant to the fact that they made those comments. Maybe she's not. But just like I said before, just being devil's advocate, that's who was in the video. That's who she went after. So, once again, you have the right to say what you want. Just please be prepared with your responses and be educated with your responses and not be hypocritical with the things that you say. Well, she's going to be hypocritical because that's what those type of TV hosts do, especially from that particular network. And I just find it entertaining that network, Fox News, is as conservative as it is, with Fox Sports being as liberal as it is. I find that very entertaining. How they both those networks from the same family tug on both sides of that vote like that. But one thing that we forgot to talk about as it pertains to the All-Star game, and this is going to be really quick. You know, of course, the owners and the commish of the NBA, they get together and they also meet during the NBA All-Star weekend. And one of the things that they talked about during the weekend was the potential of going ahead and doing a reseeding of the NBA playoffs.
Yes.
Where you take the 8 teams from both conferences and reseed them 1 through 16 based on their record and having them play out that way. That would be rather interesting.
And, you know, we'll touch on more on that when the playoffs start, because I know you have a lot to say and I have a lot of thoughts on that as well. So it should be interesting to debate. Maybe we'll bring a bit of ours on to rap with us about it as well, and have, you know, like a little three-way argument. I think that has a potential for a lot of good and a lot of bad. So
yeah.
So we'll definitely that's something that, and I want you to hold me to it, bro. when the NBA playoffs come, text me or whatever and say, hey, Negro, don't forget to talk about this.
Will do.
I'm sure people will be talking about it by that time. So I hold you to that. How about that? Nice. But speaking of, I know we're going from exciting to one of to a side of being hypocritical and ignorant. This right here with the NCAA, what they're doing to Louisville, is straight up stupid. I don't get the idea of vacating past wins, the past accomplishments, past championships.
Point.
We all know what happened. I mean, hell,
yeah.
unless Mark Emmert is going to come around the country and do like a Men in Black thing and wipe away our memories of from 2013, we all saw Louisville win the 2013 National Championship of Basketball. That's not going to change. Just like when they tried to take away, well, actually they did take away a lot of Joe Paterno's wins. They didn't do anything. Maybe embarrass the university just a little bit, but they didn't really do anything because we saw Joe Paterno win those games. Same
yeah.
with Syracuse head coach, Boeheim, Jim Boeheim, when they took away some of those wins from when he had allegedly had ineligible players playing.
Mm-hmm.
Those games happen. It happened. I mean, so what's into the NCAA going to do? Get the championship to the second place team? Oh, that's
not
why
happening.
I forgot who that second place team was, because no one remembers the loser. Okay, no one remembers who lost. I ain't about to look it up because hell, I don't know. I don't know who Louisville beat. Maybe it was the College of the Blind. I don't care. The point is, Louisville won the title that year. Seriously. I mean, I just don't get why the NCAA would punish players who play on those teams who had no damn thing, who had nothing to do with any of that, what was alleged. Like, I mean, look, I get that stripper gig at Louisville was pretty bad. I get that. I mean, hell, they had a brothel on campus. I get that. But what does vacating the national championship do? I mean, look again. Louisville got all the money from winning. They're not giving they're not going to ask Louisville to give all the Final Four money back.
They're not going to
give away like all those rewards back.
They
don't want the damn banner to go down. That's just stupid and rather toothless, in my opinion. I mean, I just wish the NCAA would just stop it with trying to vacate stuff because, I mean, they did the same thing with the Fab Five. I mean, I'm thinking of a bunch of examples while on top of my head, seriously, really. I mean, look, the Fab Five, no matter what they do at Michigan, and taking those banners down, the Fab Five still played at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Fab Five play for 2 years, from 91 to 93. Should have won the damn title against Carolina in the second year, but that's not a here nor there.
Oh,
but
I got blessed on that one. Oh.
They were better in Carolina that year. But anyway, I mean, it's, I guess the classic example of the better team not winning, but the fact of the matter is that I just think that vacating titles, vacating accomplishments, is just stupid because we saw it happen. We're not going to block it away out of our minds. I mean, maybe
not at all.
Give a damn or the rival fans, but even they're not going to block it out of their minds because they saw it happen too. So no matter how many UK fans or Kentucky fans are piling on Louisville the past couple of days, they know that the 2013 champion was Louisville. they probably don't even remember who the team that they beat was. Because, again, no one remembers second place. And what did the great Dale Earnhardt Sr. say? Second place is the first loser.
Yes.
And my dad used to say that, too. So, you know, no one cares. So I'm guessing that the set, whoever the hell Louisville beat in 2013 will be like, no, thank you. Because we know that we didn't win. So anyway, that's all I have to say about it. I just had to go on that soapbox and get it off my chest because I just think that whole concept of vacant wins and titles, it's just stupid.
It is, and I completely agree with you. But the petty side of me is like, you know what? I do remember one of the teams that Louisville beat on their way to that national championship, and that was my North Carolina A&T State University Aggies. And the reason why I remember it was because Louisville set a record. I mean, along with the fact that, yes, A&T made it to the tournament, but Louisville set a record with the most steals in a tournament game that day. And Ian Eagle, who commentated that game, made sure to remind fans of that accomplishment for the following two games that Louisville played in. I'm like, come on, bro, let it go. Let it go. So hearing that resonate for the next two games after that game, yeah, that still sticks with me. And so the petty side of me is like, ha-ha, you got to get that back, Bama's. But one of the things that they don't have to give back is the championship rings. The players still keep that.
Yep.
The program doesn't necessarily suffer. The players don't necessarily suffer. The coach, yeah, he suffers because, one, he has that nasty tattoo on his shoulder, and, two, yeah, he got fired. But he doesn't necessarily suffer for that situation alone, you know, for that championship. Now, if the NCAA were to like, okay, we're going to go ahead and make your program dead for a couple of years, that's the way to hurt the program, if that's what you want to do. You want to go ahead and catch somebody's ire? Suspend them from postseason play for a couple of years. That's a way to go ahead and catch a program's attention. You do stuff like that. Excuse me. You do stuff with a bite to make that program look and also to make other programs think, dude, we may not want to mess around. But if all you're doing is taking banners and players are still capable of walking away with keepsakes like hats, T-shirts, and rings, you're not doing nothing to nobody, bro.
And video, too.
Nothing
and
at
video.
All.
And video.
Exactly.
I mean, that's video on that. They're going to still have their reunions. They're still going to be they're still going to eat for free in Louisville for the rest of their lives. I mean, it's just silly. And to your point about suspending for a couple years of postseason play, yeah, I think that has teeth. I just feel bad about them really punishing players who had nothing to do with that because that
exactly. I get you on that one.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way after the fact. That would be punishing players who weren't even around for that. But I see you working. Though. I see you working. I just think the NCAA is just toothless. It's a toothless organization. They should really let the. I hate to say this because it's like almost like the inmates want to be asylum, but I think it's time to let colleges govern themselves. I really do because we all know if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
You ain't trying.
And it's only cheating
you ain't never
if
lying.
Your ass gets caught. It's only cheating if you get caught. We all know that. I mean, hell, it's openly understood in the SEC, folks. I'm not going to pick on the SEC specifically, but it happens in all the college conferences. But it's known in the SEC that people cheat. It's about covering how well you cover that up. I mean, that stuff that went on with Auburn and Cam Newton, or as Alabama alums call him, Scam Newton. Alabama fans cracked me up. But at any rate, that stuff happens. I mean, with Mississippi, right, that whole thing between Mississippi and Mississippi State, like surrounded former coach Hugh Freeze and those call girls on this. How stupid you have to be with that, calling from a campus phone to get calls on some campus. But look, it's known. Because I don't know if it went on at A&T for undergrad, because I went there for grad school, but when I was at NC State, we used to go to Carolina and hang out on weekends and have friends with the school in Chapel Hill. They had what you call the Carolina Blues. The Carolina Blues were gorgeous women. I mean, gorgeous women who were in the quote-unquote welcoming committee for prospective athletes. We know all that what that means, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, we all know what that means. Welcoming committee, my ass. Hey, let me be a part of that welcoming committee. let me just start
thinking
of welcoming
Scott,
committee's activities.
I'm going to be truthful about this. I'm going to be truthful about this. As far as I know, it doesn't happen on HBCU campuses because I haven't seen it, nor have I heard about it. But my God, am I waiting for it to happen? Am I waiting for it to come out? As a media guy, I'm waiting for it to happen. But as an HBCU lover, I don't want it to come out at all. So I'm in that interesting place where, yes, I've dreamed of stuff like this happening at an HBCU because I want to say that we're just like the big boys. But at the same time, man, I know stuff like this will be damaging to a HBCU program, and I really don't want that to happen. So I have mixed emotions about that happening on that level.
You think because the stereotypes that come out about HBCUs and black kids in general, or it's just
that might be part of it?
The
stereotypes could be part of it. Money could be part of it. The fact that, you know, actually the stereotype of HBCU coaches knowing everything and making sure that their program stays as clean as possible, that could be part of it. You know, so it's a whole lot of stuff that could be a reason why it doesn't happen on that level. Well, I should say that we don't know of it happening. Or maybe people don't even necessarily care. I would say that maybe HBCU fans would care.
I think most people don't give a damn. I think most people don't give a damn.
I think if it was their school and it came out and it was real salacious, somebody would care. But being that, you know, I don't think the media necessarily cares as a whole. So that might be part of it too. That might be part of it too.
I'm just saying. Remember, homeboys that day were like, "Damn, we weren't even a college athlete." Again, because I remember those years in the mid '90s, hanging on Chapel Hill, going to those clubs on Franklin Street, seeing those young women scantily clad, walking around with prospective athletes. And actually, I got a quick story for you. There's a particular club we used to go to. We used to frequent a lot when we ever visited Chapel Hill. And I remember, again, this was like maybe 1996. This is back when Carolina had a great football team under Matt Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in there, and we're like trying to get a dance floor, right? Because since the demographics is lopsidedly in favor of men, because they're like two or three women for every one guy at Chapel Hill. So we're in there, and it's all flavors, all colors and flavors. So we're in there. And so we're trying to get our dance on. We're actually making headway, if you will. And I heard someone chuckle in the corner and go, get him, bro. I turned around. It was Dre Bly with two of those Carolina Blues hanging all over him. I'm like, yo, he was just pumping his fist at me and my crew, man, for getting it. And then I turned to my right, and who I see? Julius Peppers.
Oh.
This big behemoth of a brother.
Yeah.
Just with three or four of them just hanging all over. And I'm like, yo. And shoot, ain't no way. I couldn't even study if I was an athlete.
Hard times, bro. Hard times.
I'm saying hard. It's hard to be a student athlete, I guess, but especially a high profile one. But nevertheless, I should have started. But yeah,
I was gonna say we got the Travelers at T when I was undergrad. So you know whenever the athletes got tired of dealing with the young ladies on their campus, you know I've seen the likes of Stackhouse, Shee Wallace. I've seen Tim Duncan and Ray Childress come up for homecoming. So, yeah, whenever you get tired of dealing with stickers on the yard, Yeah, they come to tea, bro. They come to tea. They know.
You said they know.
They know. Hey, let me give up my whip and burrow, bro.
I'm picturing Rashid and Stackhouse, two Boyce's brothers, on that campus. Oh, damn. I know that. But one last thing, you mentioned Tim Duncan. One last story, I promise you. When my brother, after my brother pledged alpha at Winston State, you know, they're about the same age. So, and Wake Forest is like maybe 10-mile drive from Winston State on the other side of town.
Yeah.
So, Mitch told me at every frat party, a constant guest was Tim Duncan. He will almost always show up at his at their alpha parties, and he got plenty of love, plenty of love. But yeah, he would sometimes bring some white girls from Wake Forest over to party with them.
Wrong move, bro.
That made me think about what my brother always said about him. He actually knew him, and so yeah,
oh, wow.
I thought that was pretty. Pretty cool story too. So, yeah, we have stories about athletes today as well. But that travel thing—that's a trip. That is an absolute trip. And I know we're off topic, but damn it, I don't care because that's one cool ass story. One cool ass story. Oh man, speaking of HBCUs, man, we'll get you out here on this. I know we've seen conference breakups throughout the years with realignment, whether it's from like Miami, Boston College, Virginia Tech leaving the Big East, the ACC, especially was really bad when Syracuse and Pitt left to go to ACC, and it was even more of a brouhaha when Missouri left the Big 12 to go to the SEC. And Nebraska stepped their way out of the Big 12 to go to the Big 10. And perhaps the most salacious, well, not salacious, but I'm trying to figure out the as to describe the whole Maryland ACC breakup, which still breaks my heart.
Wow.
As a long-time ACC fan. I'm still not used to with Maryland in the Big Ten. I saw them play Minnesota the other night, and I was like, I still have to get used to that. That's been 4 or 5 years.
You still have to get used to the ultras. Yeah,
I'm still not used to it. I'm not used to seeing Maryland as a Big Ten school. I'm sorry. I probably never will.
Neither am I.
But that was a messy-ass breakup. I mean, I know you were close to it in Maryland, but that was a messy breakup. Now, that kind of looks like that pales in comparison to what's happened with Hampton in the MEAC.
Yes.
And I know you have a whole lot to say about that. I'm going to give you the floor. I promise you in less than 2 minutes. But there is a write-up on the Undefeated, written by William C. Roden, which is one of my favorite sports columnists.
My man, Morgan State's own, yes.
That's right, Morgan State's own, exactly. Great, great, great sports writer. He interviewed William Harvey, who's the president, the longtime president of Hampton, and he said that – the leader conference was decades in the making, which I found very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So they've only been a member of the MEAC since 1995. I didn't realize that. You figure Hampton was a long time member, but they come from the CIAA or something.
CIAA, yes sir. CIAA.
Okay. I didn't know that. But be that as it may, They're about to leave to go to the Big South Conference to be with the likes of Winthrop College. Charleston Southern, UNC Asheville, and among other schools. High Point University, as well as Campbell,
Liberty,
and of course, Liberty, Longwood, and Radford. So basically, they don't have to travel as much, because the Big South is centralized between Virginia and the Carolinas. So, but they've been looking for, but Hampton, I didn't realize Hampton was looking to get out of the MEAC for a while. And so maybe the same reason why Tennessee State competes in the Ohio Valley Conference, maybe because of bigger, more exposure, more money, who knows. But I'm not privy. I just became privy to the pettiness that's going on between Hampton and MEAC. So I'm going to turn it over to you, since you're a hell of a lot closer to the than I am. So tell us the pettiness that's going on and why you think this is such a what's the word I want to use? A kerfuffle of sorts, I guess.
That's a good word to use for it, and I'm going to go ahead and start it by saying this. Anyone listening that hears what I'm saying and feels as though that something that I'm saying is wrong, you can always address me or you can catch me on social media, especially on Twitter. That's at Dwayne_Nash, or you can catch me at The Yard HBCU, The Yard HBCU on Twitter, because I don't want to get anything wrong, and if I do, I want to make sure that I'm corrected. But like you said, back on November 16th, Hampton announced that they would be making a move to the Big South. And, of course, like any other team that makes a move to another conference, it's all financial-based. Like you said, part of it is because they won't have to spend as much money on the traveling, being that the majority of the schools that will be in the conference with them, with the exception of a couple of additions, are there in both Virginia and North Carolina and South Carolina. Now, those additions will be Kennesaw State, which is right outside of Atlanta, and Monmouth University, which is actually already in the conference, which is in New Jersey. Now, what's the significance of those two schools being added into this conference, which is based mainly in the South? Monmouth, you have that New York TV market. Kennesaw, you have the Atlanta TV market with the Big South, which is starting its own TV network. I've already been on the show, and I've talked about that briefly as a reason why that's the reason that, along with the travel money saved and exposure, is the reason why Hampton is making a move to the Big South. But in their exit, announcement, the president of Hampton made it clear that he was still willing to keep relationships with HBCUs and the MEAC and continue to play games against these institutions as they make their transition. This is where the problem comes out. Like you said before, Hampton has been looking to make a move for years. As a matter of fact, rumor has it, there are other institutions that are looking to make moves or have been looking to make moves outside of the MEAC and not only be and to join Hampton and Tennessee State as the two other HBCUs not in the main HBCU conference outside of UDC, but UDC is D2, and nobody's even looking that far out, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. But this is where it starts to get crazy. Last week, it was announced that Hampton will not be playing any MEAC teams on their schedule. So it made it seem, from the outside looking in, that Hampton was responsible for not wanting to play any of the MEAC teams. Hampton said, no, we're not going to let that come out and make us look ugly. So the president decides to write a letter, an inset letter. It talks about how the MEAC had come up with vindictive sanctions and unreasonable demands on Hampton if they wanted to go ahead and compete MEAC teams for 2018. But the thing that makes it interesting to me is the fact that, you know, Hampton will be leaving the conference in July 1 of this year. Why do I bring that up? Because Hampton has a list of items of unfair sanctions that the MEAC has placed upon them, or that they feel as though it's unfair. But I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. If you look at these things that the MEAC is putting on Hampton, I don't know necessarily if they're actually unreasonable. Now, let me go ahead and read the letter.
Do tell.
It says here, I'm sorry?
I said do tell. I'm all in.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that audio was good and that you could hear me. Okay, it says here. Now, as part of the letter starts out saying that Hampton was willing to play an 8-game football schedule with the MEAC in 2018, right? But, of course,
Right.
The MEAC said, no, you can't do that unless you follow our rules. So, as part of the issue, Hampton List that, you know, they must, you know, play a full eight-game schedule slate in its 2018 football schedule. Hampton says that that's an issue because this demand hamstrings Hampton from scheduling games with his future conference teams in the Big South. Wait a minute. How is that possible?
Mm.
You just said in the letter that you were willing to play an eight-game schedule. Now you're saying that it's an issue to play it because you won't be able to play eight Big South opponents? I'm trying to understand which one is it. But that may come up a little bit later in their list of demands by the MEAC. Demand number two is Hampton will not be eligible for any MEAC championships following its effective date of withdrawal from the MEAC. The Hampton says that demand eliminates any opportunity for Hampton to earn a bid to a bowl game in football, an automatic invitation in basketball for winning a conference championship, or from being considered for an at-large bid in other sports. My question to this is this, Hampton. Why should you be able to win a conference championship? You're leaving the conference July 1, so you're no longer a member. Yes, you're playing a MEAC
right.
schedule, but you're no longer a conference member. So how does that work out, that a non-conference member can win the conference championship?
That's crazy. That's crazy.
That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so next one is Hampton will not be eligible for any conference superlatives and awards such as Player of the Week, Coach of the Year, et cetera, et cetera. But it says here that the demand penalizes Hampton student athletes and the coaches who excel on the playing field or in the classroom, because it also includes, you know, the academic awards that they give out for student athletes. My response to that is, once again, you're playing a conference schedule, but you're no longer a conference member. So you shouldn't be able to win conference awards if you're not a conference member. That doesn't make any sense to
right.
me. It just doesn't. Number four, Hampton will be a non-conference opponent for all member institutions. Hampton's response to that is this demand makes Hampton the only independent college in NCAA Division I football, effectively ending hopes of qualifying for a bowl game. First and foremost, no, they won't be the only Division I independent football team. Have you heard of Army? Have you heard of Notre Dame? Have you heard of BYU?
Right.
I understand that,
mm-hmm.
yes, those teams are FBS schools, but your statement was Division I. It wasn't FCS. Yes, you will be the only FCS, but you know what? That's because, one, you wanted to play an eight-game schedule against conference opponents that you're no longer in that conference of. That happens. Also, there aren't any bowl games in FCS football, with the exception, of course, of the Celebration Bowl.
Celebration
and the
Bowl.
Only way that
yep.
you can become a team playing in the Celebration Bowl is if you're playing in the MEAC or SWAC. So if you want to play in the Celebration Bowl, bro, go ahead and join an HBCU conference. But it does not keep you from playing a playoff game. That, my friend, is not true. Now, if your record is good enough and the voters for FCS football playoffs think that your record and strength of schedule is strong enough to compete in the playoffs, then, yes, you'll probably be selected as an at-large team to compete in the playoffs. So what's your beef? I'm still trying to understand
yeah.
that. Number five, Hampton is required full eight-game MEAC football schedule for 2019-2021 unless both institutions agree not to play. This goes back to my earlier statement about the whole eight-game thing. So my guess is the MEAC is saying if you want to play an eight-game schedule in 2018, you're going to also have to play an eight-game schedule in 2019, 20, and 21, which is kind of messed up. I will agree with Hampton on that one. It says here that this three-year demand is impossible since Hampton will belong to the Big South and will schedule eight conference games these seasons. In addition, Hampton is being forced to pay financial losses caused by failure to play NEAC opponents. You know, it says, you know, and now, like I said before, if they're obligated to play these games, if they agree to the 2018 schedule, I see why that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And shame on you, NEAC, for making them do that. Number six, Hampton will not be eligible for any NEAC revenue distribution from NEAC subsequent to June 30th, 2018, including any future revenue that will otherwise be obligated to a current, keyword there is current, NEAC conference member. Hampton says this demand means that Hampton will receive no revenue from the MEAC, including event revenue sharing from playing a member school during the remainder of the year. Dude, of course you're not going to get any money. You're no longer a conference member. Just because you're playing this conference schedule does not mean that you're obligated to receive conference money. That's not how this works. Now, one of the things that they pointed out in the letter was that they were supposed to inform the MEAC on July 1, 2007, that they were going to make a move. They didn't let it be known until November 16th. So, yes, any penalties that Hampton would face because of the late notification is on Hampton, not on the conference. Bruh, that was on you. You should have, one, either tried to come to some sort of agreement beforehand, making the announcement, or shortly thereafter, or two, wait until July 1 of 2018 to say that you were going to make the move in 19 and hold your horses. But no, you want to go ahead and jump the shark and make the announcement early. Now, do I say that the MEAC is being a little petty about making them having to play a 2019, 20, and 21 schedule if they want to play an 18 schedule? Yes, that is petty. But other than that, man, everything else is well within the MEAC's right to say that you're not eligible to do because you're no longer a member. So, with all of that said, and all of the whining and dining, well, not whining and dining, all the whining and crying that Hampton did in this letter about, oh, poor, woe is me, the MEAC is doing this to us, the Hampton president follows up all of those things with this statement. Over the past few years, higher-ranking athletic conferences have courted Hampton University for potential conference membership, including the Big South, whose power ranking is 25th in the nation. MEAC's ranking is 31st amongst 32 NCAA Division I athletic conferences in the nation, which equates to being at the bottom of the Division I, as refers to several conference power rankings. Hampton deserves to unite athletics with its celebrated upward trajectory in academics. How petty was that of Hampton to put that out there? Matter of fact, I looked at the BPI rankings on ESPN before doing the show tonight. Actually, the MEAC is ranked 32nd out of 32 on ESPN's website. But what you're trying to tell me is that it's the MEAC's fault that talent, it's solely on the MEAC, or the SWAC in this case, because the SWAC is 31st, that the talent won't go to the MEAC or SWAC, but they'll go to every place else. Is that what Hampton is trying to say?
I just
find it highly disrespectful that they would do that, knowing the plight of HBCUs, knowing how difficult, even for themselves, to get talented athletes to come to their institution and play. They know this, man. How dare they do this? So what I did was when I looked at, you know, the BPI of the conferences that are between them, and in order, from 23 to 32, 23 is Ohio Valley, which is where Tennessee State plays. Big South is 24, where, of course, Hampton is looking to go. Then you have the Big Sky at 25, Patriot at 26, Big West at 27, Southland at 28, the NEC at 29, Atlantic Sun at 30, the SWAC at 31, and the MEAC at 32. All right, I get it. The MEAC and the SWAC is having a hard time getting talent to those conferences. We already know why. Because, one, these two conferences don't have a TV deal. We've already talked about that being a problem with those two conferences.
Right.
You know, it's problems with the facilities in some cases. Or I shouldn't say problems. Their smaller facilities don't match up with the facilities of the other conferences. We've also talked about financial giving as it pertains to alumni giving back to the institutions, and also attendance in which conferences generate revenue, problems that cause when fans don't come out to games to see these athletes play, which is why they're lower on the BPI rankings. But what I decided to do was also, this happened, you want to go ahead and point fingers? I'm going to point fingers at you, bruh. This is what your BPI ranking is within all of college basketball. Okay, first and foremost, they have the fourth best record in the conference and overall record within the conference. Okay, they have the best BPI within the MEAC. I will say that. The closest teams to them are Central with 269 and North Carolina A&T at 296. But with that said, if you were to put Hampton into the Big South as of right now, they would be in the lower half of the Big South's BPI rankings, just being above Garner Webb, who actually they lost to earlier this season, Presbyterian, and Longwood, three which have sub-500 records in both in-conference and out-of-conference play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just basketball. I don't even really want to talk about football because we saw what Kennesaw State did in the playoffs this year, right? Also,
right.
Monmouth,
right,
who was in that conference, another playoff team. And then you have Charleston Southern, who came from out of nowhere, which I'm familiar with my time of living in Charleston. They came from out of nowhere, and they became a playoff team in 2015. So Hampton's going to have some issues on their hands when they go over to the Big South. Yeah, they want to go ahead and chase the money, which I'm not mad at all.
Right.
But you should learn a lesson from Maryland and from Rutgers. What happens when you chase money? You end up going somewhere and get impounded, and nobody's going to want to – I'm not going to say no one's going to want to go to Hampton, but beware. If you don't turn your program around quickly or if it's not competitive, I will say they will be competitive in track and field, but if they're not competitive in football and basketball, they're going to miss out in talent, and they're going to struggle in the Big South, and that's going to become problematic. And the one thing that, first and foremost, those fans in the Big South, they don't know Hampton. They may not travel to go see Hampton play or see their teams play at Hampton. And Hampton, for sure, is not going to go to Liberty and see them play against Liberty. They barely go to see them play against Howard. They're not going to travel to see them play against Radford. They're not going to travel to it. Exactly. So I just hope that, you know, Hampton reaps the benefits and the rewards of what they're looking for in terms of financial greatness or financial increasement within their athletic department. But, man, first and foremost, don't diss HBCUs like that. That's grimy. And secondly, you got to understand the rules of changing conferences. Yes, you're going to have to be an independent. Coastal Carolina did it just a couple of years ago when they moved up from FBS, well, from FCS to FBS. Matter of fact,
right.
Winston-Salem State had to do it. Exactly. Winston-Salem State had to do it when they left the MEAC and was waiting to get into the CIAA. So, bruh, you're going to have to do it too, especially because of your poor planning. Now, had you done it on time, it probably wouldn't be an issue and you wouldn't have to wait. But now you got to wait because you did it wrong. But yes, the MEAC is also being petty by forcing you to play that 19 through 2001 schedule. So they being petty, MEAC being petty, I'm going to be petty with them. We can go ahead and be a 90s R&B group and be petty, 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 and I can be Dwayne Wiggins. How about that?
On that note, we'll call it to an end. Well said, my man. Well said. I appreciate it.
My name is Dwayne, man.
There you go. Last name Wiggins. anyway, thank you very much for joining us. Torrin will be contacting us shortly. You take a like, man. Be blessed.
You do the same, bro.
All right, peace out. That's the man, Dwayne Nash. Please check him out on Sleaze Radio every Tuesday now on Blog Talk Radio as well as the YSHTU Sports. That was hilarious. You know what? I think it's time to turn the Bible to the book of 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 13, and read a little bit from that as well. Anyway, y'all, thank y'all for joining me on this podcast, this entertaining podcast. Hope you had as much fun as I did. This is Scott Burks with the Clown Hour, signing off. 06. Good night.